Welcome to the Mudstack Podcast, all the fits that make news.
The whole world gone crazy!
Gentlemen, welcome back to episode 210, and now roughly into week two of public impeachment inquiry and a lot of other good stuff. What's that?
Week two is done.
Or not week two. So it's week three, I should say, rather. You're right.
Waiting on them to come back from a well-earned break, some respite.
This is what happens when I start work at 3:30 in the morning.
I know. I had the luxury of starting at 7:30, so I'm not judging you at all.
Oh, no worries.
But no, the new expletive deleted, it's too early in the podcast. Yeah, that has come to light, long story short, is that when they reconvene, there's going to be a hearing basically on the 4th of December. Congressman Nadler per his invitation in the White House. Legal staff said, hey, y'all are going to have a chance to participate, but we're shaping up articles of impeachment.
Yeah. So overall, well, first off, everyone, welcome back to the Mod State Podcast. As always, thanks for tuning in domestically and internationally. It's always great to hear from you, and we're happy that you're listening, because if you wouldn't, well, we'd probably be doing this anyway. So you're doing well, my friend?
I am, and I was having an internal debate. Which do we enjoy more, the precast or the podcast? And I say it's kind of tough to tell at times because they tend to blur, but no, it's going to be here. It's going to be back. And
good. Yeah. I would say the precast and the podcast, I would say the actual episode is far more polished. I think the quote unquote radio voices come out, the ums go away, and me just aimlessly talking. Well, that continues in the episode a lot of the time, but you know, either way, we're back. Anyway, you were beginning to talk about what we are going to expect. And of course, we have talked quite a bit about what we have observed so far. And I think it's best to start with what is most important. And that is, where really does popular opinion lie with the president and his impeachment? And I think right now, without actually quoting any statistics, the country's still pretty divided on whether or not this president should be impeached. And I think that is what really matters the most for Democrats, quite divided. Frankly. Well, the whole country's divided. But I would say specifically on this, I think it isn't so much who are vehemently against impeaching the president. I think it's mostly one side, a majority of one side, like, yeah, we'll just get rid of him. And the other side that's like, This is bothersome. I'm bored by this, unfortunately. And then there's the far left side that says he should be in jail, and then the far right that, you know, well, he's the second coming of Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. Do I pretty much have it summed up?
Which brings you to people, individuals like you and I, who will be the difference makers in terms of course, they're all putting their finger in the air to see the popular movement. You think the 40 plus Democrats up for re-election in purple districts aren't watching their approval ratings?
Oh,
they are.
Of course,
that 11% swing in the independents, who were for it, now saying that has swung.
Yeah.
Now, again, there is a certain margin of error there, but you could say at the very least it's been a 7% swing, and that's being watched. And worth bearing in mind, now she's not the issue here; she's not the president. But Speaker Pelosi's approval ratings between 27% and 29%. So it's something to bear in mind when we talk about her relationship with the president, who his approval rating is at least between 44 and 48.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've been thinking to myself recently about where I will ultimately stand on this and how I will feel about it really for the rest of my life, because we may not pass this way, or we may, again, with another president. And I was watching the Netflix documentary on Bobby Kennedy, and you know, we'll probably get to that a little later, but I think there's an interesting parallel to what was going on in the late 60s and today. But that just being, you know, we will look back on this. There, we will inevitably have some sort of Netflix documentary in this in the future, maybe in virtual reality or something, where my grandkids will be watching it with me and they'll ask, what was it like and what did you think? And, you know, I think our back and forths on this podcast is a pretty good representation of how I feel. And I still don't know ultimately where, whether I think it's important to impeach him or just let the 2020 election, that'll probably be my ultimate answer, to let the 2020 election sort of hash it all out. But yeah, I think, you know, after these couple of weeks, I don't think that overall popular opinion has really shifted one way or the other. But it'll be interesting to see what the Judiciary Committee comes up with in terms of firm articles of impeachment. And I think that's what's important to really push out to listeners, and specifically our international listeners, is what is going to transpire now. So what Nadler sort of takes over the theatrics, but I don't think he's quite like Schiff is, but he's going to be running the show as it is in the Judiciary Committee. If I'm mistaken, please correct
me. I think that's what's going to make it be taken more seriously to a certain degree. No insult to the representative Schiff, but there has been, I think it's fair to say, a certain amount of showmanship. I'm not going to say it's been equal on both sides, but it has certainly been showmanship, in my view, on both sides. I think there's one individual in particular amongst the Republicans that I didn't think anybody could act out more than Jim Jordan. But we'll get to that. But remember, bear this in mind when we think about anything to do with, well, has the population at large opinion shifted in any major way in the last? No, absolutely not in the last 2 weeks. But that 7 to 11% we were talking about, that's amongst a 4% block of the electorate. Remember, it might be slightly larger because of people going, oh my God, tired of both sides. It might be 5% of the electorate. Still, that's 5% of, on a good day, and maybe this election especially, half the country votes. Mm-hmm. So that's not a huge swing. You're absolutely, in terms of overall numbers, you're right.
And the next question to me then is, if it is up to the judiciary to really find out what they will or what they could impeach him for, ultimately, I don't know, like you said, the showmanship on both sides, I think that really was meant for the intelligence committee, but I don't know that the same theatrics will be in the Judiciary Committee, which means that, you know, there's not going to be any bombshells that are going to be dropped unless someone like Trump himself goes and testifies, or, you know, Don McGahn does, or Giuliani or Bolton, you know, any number of these characters. There's not going to be any bombshells, which to me indicates that I don't know that popular opinion shifts that much more. And they really want to get this wrapped up, what, before Christmas, or actually before the new year starts, which I think is...
You mean in the House?
Yeah.
I think that's the overall goal.
Which, again, it's a real gamble, and I think that they were really betting on popular opinion being much stronger for this.
What did I tell you? It may have been privately. I'm not sure if I said this in the podcast, but... I did feel like televising this was going to blow up in their face, meaning the Democrats, because whoever I think won it, if there was a winner, I know the loser was the American people for this whole deal, mm-hmm. but regardless of which way you look at it, this way, I mean, there is that issue of the embarrassment of it all.
Yeah. Well, you know, and there's what I actually find more interesting about the entire thing is sort of what we're learning about the specific characters who have been part of this. And, you know, Giuliani's in his own sort of hot seat. And it'd be interesting
to
see. What's that?
Where is he, by the way? Has he been seen in public in America?
I have no idea. But his former associate, who's, I'm going to butcher his name, who's actually in jail right now, is willing to essentially testify against Giuliani. Devin Nunes went to Ukraine on taxpayers, on the taxpayer dime, to essentially figure out this whole Ukrainian thing, which we didn't know about. And so a lot of this is just, it leaves me a bit disenchanted. And I think it's, some of it's downright almost hilarious in a way that's sad, not really.
What makes him harping on Ukraine, and I think the nice way I put it, or was trying to put it, was opaque talking points that he was going, it's like, what are you raving about?
Well, that's just the thing.
About Ukraine.
To hear him talk the way he was, and then to find out later how many times did he travel there?
I don't know.
It's just so weird to me.
Once would be weird.
Once is weird enough. And it's just so weird how it kind of, this whole story just turns. And
that's what I mean. I didn't think anybody could act out more than Jim Jordan.
Right.
It still pisses me off. He doesn't wear that damn coat.
Well, Jim Jordan's got his own set of weird problems. But
yes, of course he does. But no, that's a different set of demons. This, at least Jim Jordan was on topic. People have joined the circus before, okay. He didn't come in from left field. Nunes at times came in playing a different sport altogether. What are you talking about?
Yeah. No, I agree with you completely. You know, and we were talking a bit about this in precast because, again, the president is going to have his ardent supporters no matter what. And it's not too often that you hear them, it's not too often that you hear them peddle such conspiracy theories in ways that is almost stunning. And
it was like sending you a link from IlluminatiWatcher.com or how dare I say Alex Jones.
Really? And you know, we hope that we would hold our elected officials to a higher standard. And again, this is just more of the fallout that I think is
to any standard.
And so
tell me what standard we're abiding by now.
The one specific case that comes to mind is the elected representative from Louisiana, Mr. Kennedy.
Oh, the senator.
Senator rather, who literally was on, was it Fox or MSN? It doesn't really matter.
It doesn't matter if it was,
but he
could have been YouTube.
Literally, I think it was.
It was Meet the Press. I could be completely wrong.
Anyway, it was on Fox, and he essentially came out and said that, hey, look, no one knows if he was Ukraine or not. You don't know. I don't know.
Well, they asked him in the interview, you know, who do you think it was, Ukraine or Russia? He was like, I don't know. You don't know. Nobody knows.
To which is basically peddling a conspiracy. I mean,
this is absurd.
It's insane when the intelligence community, when the conservatives are suspicious of the intelligence community, which is sort of absurd generally, because if you like limited and small government as a conservative.
Hold on a second. I totally forgot about something. Let's bear this in mind now. The president has stated that he asked Vladimir Putin, president of the Russian Federation, Did y'all have anything to do with that awful activity in 2016? And you know what I'm talking about. And Putin, of course, said, no, we didn't. So the man, look, it's been explained.
Case closed.
That's what we got.
Well, so here he is peddling essentially a conspiracy theory. And look, I'll be the first one to say, because I know there'd be someone who vehemently supports the president would say, how do you know? I said, look, I don't know. However, I'm going to have a little bit of faith in the overall consensus of the intelligence communities that it was indeed Russia, because let's break it down. And we talked about this in precast. Ukraine has nothing to gain from from turning our elections in the United States. They pretty much want pretty much members of the EU. They're fighting a war against Russia. They're receiving aid from us. Even if they
are an American proxy state, let's get real.
Yeah, and if you think that Hillary Clinton wouldn't support Ukraine or wouldn't give Ukraine aid, you're wrong. She's more hawkish than probably Donald Trump is. So again, it comes back down to Occam's razor, right? What's a form of Occam's razor? What's the most likely explanation for this? Is it Ukraine who's caught in a proxy war with the Soviet Union, or with essentially a fairly shattered state, or Russia, who's looking to expand the former Soviet Union empire? I'll wait.
This is the thing. We've got to look at this. Look, like I said to you, I know there's Serbian hackers, there's Algerian hackers, how there's probably hackers down the street. All right. But the reality is we know en masse groups over the years, I mean, the Steele dossier, what was it about? Which country was that in that started the whole phony Mueller, the hashtag witch hunt? Now, you can't have it both ways. The issue is not whether or not one is a Trump supporter, a President Trump supporter. The issue here is, no, you got to pick a side and die for it. Just like with Hillary. Well, she can't be in bed with both the Chinese and the Russians. Last I checked, those two countries always have and always will hate one another. Okay, same thing here. You've got to say, okay, the Steele dossier was all phony, made up and spurred the whole Mueller thing. Okay, but what was that topic? What did it center around? All the dirty dealings potentially to do with Moscow. Not Kiev, not Belgrade, not Hattiesburg, Mississippi. Everything. I mean, okay, so you realize there's articles on Wikipedia, for instance, on how many people it would take to foment, foster, and protect a conspiracy theory over a period of 5 years. And I think the moon landing was something like 1,700 people. And it was estimated at best it would stay a secret 2+ years.
Yeah.
You can't have it that way.
No. Yeah. And so the next question is why?
There's too many people here.
Yeah. The question then is why? Or maybe it's a simple answer. Why would Kennedy go on Fox and essentially peddle conspiracy theories and then come back on CNN and say, I apologize, I was wrong? Is it just a blatant disregard for the facts, which is the same party that peddles fake news?
Did Senator Kennedy get on CNN?
Yeah, he came back on CNN and said, I was wrong. And the question is, why did you have to get to the point where you had to go back on CNN to say you were wrong? Why did you answer in such the stupidest way you possibly could in the first place? Maybe he thought he was going to get safe harbor on Fox News, but he didn't. He did not get that sort of safe harbor.
I don't think you can get safe harbor anywhere with that kind of. And again, this does not come back to. I dare say, my good fellow, you know, I've been one of the fairest people in any variant of the media towards the president. Okay, this has nothing to do with that. This has to, okay, before we can even have any relevant discussion about yay or nay articles of impeachment, whatever, we've got to at least agree to the general framework for the debate. And one of those, you know, with Mueller, was the non-legal term of collusion, whatever, which he didn't use it. But the point is, that's what that whole ordeal was focused on. Mm-hmm. So to then turn around and say, well, in reality, no, it was Ukraine. Okay, one is a former world superpower trying to act like a world superpower again. The other is a formal vassal state of that one turned proxy state of America.
Yeah.
It doesn't, no. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's all, and it's at this point, it's not even moving the goalposts. It's just flat out lying.
Why are we talking about this?
Yeah.
Senator Kennedy?
I don't know. And again, I'm not trying to point fingers. I'm really just trying to make sense of the entire thing, and it doesn't really help making sense of the entire thing when you hear stuff like that, or you hear.
He has been our office back every time I've written.
Yeah, or
and he's nothing but genteel.
Sure, I'm sure that's the case. I wouldn't expect any more from him to be that kind of person. But you know, again, you hear stuff like Devin Nunes going to Ukraine, and it's just like, Jesus.
What? Oh, wait, did I send you the picture of the book?
Maybe.
About Devin Nunes?
No.
Oh, God, no, this is real. I'm going to, look, we're going to continue, but I'm going to send this to you right now because, no, this is unbelievable. But this individual has come out with a biography about Devin Nunes, okay. Like right now. For like $29.95, and it's called, like, the name of the article that they parse, you know, from the book was, I think that they're calling him a farm boy, like he's playing that image. I'm like, oh, we're farmers now. That's what we're back to. And I say this, no disrespect to my ex-in-laws, like I love them, great people. I know that's their representative, but go on.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll find out how that all pans out, but
will we?
I don't know.
We ever know the truth?
I don't know. Well, anyway, more to be seen starting, I think it is next week, rather.
Today's 4th of December, Tuesday. If I recall correctly.
Yeah, and I'll be curious to see what they make of this. Obviously, their tactic is not to draw this out, and I think that's the smart move, except for sort of the tinderbox you're playing with is really not having a solid plan moving forward, or having weak articles of impeachment. But, you know, again,
there's nothing else that we would rather have our elected representatives focusing on right now. There's positively. Yeah, this is the only thing. Absolutely. We would have just a void. I mean, come on. We're talking about a House of Representatives that has not passed a budget in a decade.
Yeah.
That's the first prescribed power of the purse to the House of Representatives. And we function by continuing resolutions.
Yeah.
This is what we're occupying our time with.
It really is upsetting, really are frustrating, rather, that the actual work that needs to get done is overshadowed or just not really getting done. So, and, you know, that maybe is an interesting pivot now, to take a few minutes in the other half of this episode, because I think we'll be able to make some parallels to what's going on right now. But I did get a chance, actually, in my spare time off of school for right now before I fly to South Africa next week, to watch both the new documentary that's out called World War II in Color, and then I pivoted over to the Bobby Kennedy documentary, which was fascinating. And I think it was like five episodes, and it really sort of broke down his in some very controversial things, I will admit. That being the fact that, you know, the sort of blatant nepotism of being the Attorney General under his brother as President John F. Kennedy. But in kind of the increased use of federal power, maybe some federal overreach, but I think it did eventually evolve into his real passion for people and his passion to help people. And I think, honestly, from my big takeaway and a lot of the other research I've done on Bobby Kennedy, I do believe he was genuine. I mean, like he said, like, I don't really have anything. I could just retire now and be fine. You know, I've got daddy's money. Like, we're good. I'm a Kennedy. But I really think he did mean well. And when he went to places like Kentucky, and he went to places like, I think it was Alabama, that,
if I recall,
that, yeah, he truly meant what he, or he really wanted to make a change and a difference. The interesting parallels I see are a lot of, you know, progressive, and certainly I think in his time, I think what he really wanted is almost more, there's almost more of a breadth of, if I dare I say, like, humanity, like this love for humanity and those who really struggle the most. And that was an interesting message. And I mean, like, literally talking about starving people, starving children. And of course, that just so happens that his political life was maybe in one of the most transformative times in American culture, with the civil rights movement and Martin Luther King Jr., etc. I mean, I think my big takeaway here, the big takeaway is, when we talk about a country divided today, good Lord, the late 60s.
The chaos. Think about it. They actually had
chaos.
Federal, a guy like Wallace Run, and then he got shot too.
Yeah, federal troops, essentially. I mean, 1967 riots in Detroit, LA, just insane. And really, you know, you can play hindsight's 2020, but a lot of this had to do with civil rights. And we can look today in 2019 and say that I think it was probably all worth it, even at the expense of the death of a few people that really pushed that progression, whether that's JFK, Martin Luther, or Bobby Kennedy. or even Malcolm X in that same light, but maybe not as high in the priority list.
That's where I kind of I look at these millennials with the hashtag okay boomer. I'm sure you've seen that.
Oh yeah,
being snarky, and I think that's really hilarious because I'm going, okay, I get it. Every generation has struggles, and that was when media first became big, so we know more about it. But no, they no shit legit had a lot to contend with in their time. Okay, and I haven't seen any great thinkers of our generation of Robert Kennedy, for example, on that side. Perhaps if he'd had the opportunity when he was younger, Bernie Sanders, I don't know. We'll never know.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's – I get it that well, there are things that, of course, the generation did wrong. But it's like the ones that cry about the national debt, I'm going – okay, says the generation all for Medicare for all.
Yeah. Well, I think what's interesting in a number of, I would say, a good chunk of boomers out there were those hippies in 1968, 1969. And I think they ultimately had middle class jobs, and they kind of benefited from that, where the millennial and Gen Z generation haven't been able, you know, maybe don't have the same cultural issues that were going on, but certainly don't reap the benefit that the boomer generation did in terms of economic and financial well-being. And yes, the boomers, or excuse me, the Gen Z and the millennials have adopted kind of a shitty outcome in terms of wages and real estate and prices, and of course the
also developed a very shitty outlook on life.
Well, and I will defend our generation by saying, look, I think the discontent, if you will, and the discontent certainly is no match for maybe the discontent of the 60s and 70s or having to be drafted to go fight a ridiculous war in Asia.
You know, right.
Certainly don't have to contend with that. And I give that. My hats are off to the boomers that had to do that. I mean, we took care of Vietnam vets all the time. It really wasn't their choice. It was either that or jail. And,
yeah, that's true.
And but, you know, and again, the perspective of the millennials and the Gen Z are true. They're valid that when they do get criticism from maybe the boomer generation in terms of what they're doing in life, whether they hear like, why don't you have kids yet? Or why don't you own a house? Sort of the perspective from the boomer generation, there is a kind of perpetual middle finger to that generation saying, look, we've got, I can't because of a world that you, whether or not you were part of, idly sat by and let happen. So, but I guess we're not here to necessarily talk about the generational gap here, but there certainly
it
are.
It's an interesting sidebar, though, because a lot of the, it's interesting to note the young people that I've come across that have seen that documentary and really like it, really like Bobby, and maybe that's where he meets his transcendence, if you will.
Yeah, I think there's not enough
today.
I certainly don't think there's enough in terms of a political hero.
He was a prophet. I think Nixon put it best. Out of those three boys, he said he was the fiery street preacher.
Yeah, and I think that if progressives really wanted to reach for a hero, that could potentially be your man. And I'm certainly not discounting the amount of sort of celebrity status that he had that made a lot of people within the Democratic Party and abroad not like him.
He did run his brother's winning presidential campaign.
Look, he was a political genius.
He knew what was up. He knew what time it was.
Absolutely.
Take the risks he did, getting his clothes ripped up by people. I mean, yeah. They reached out to touch him like he was Jesus Christ or something.
Yeah, 100%. And I'm not saying that 50% of the nation wanted him president. There was a lot of people that didn't, even within the Democratic Party. But I think in terms of the values, I think we're looking for a values candidate that really fits the mold of what the Progressive Party is, and that is definitely that. Now, the problem is where do you find that person? I think Obama was the closest candidate and president.
And remember, he ran to the right of Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just interesting how times change. And again, you know, I sat down with my folks are in town, and I got to spend the weekend with them. And it's interesting to almost immediately, we begin to talk about kind of politics and culture. And I think that happens because we are maybe one of the few families out there with sort of the boomer generation and the millennial generation that can actually sit down in a coffee shop with people around us and not yell at each other, but really have honest discussions about perspective and about, you know, and I think ultimately I'm blessed and fortunate to have spent hours and hours and hours talking to you and doing research to be able to approach the conversation of maybe a more, just a different perspective, and sort of meet in the middle and say, you know, I'm coming here to discuss the perspective of the millennial generation and why we, or why the millennial generation sees things a certain way. And it isn't, I think having more knowledge and being more neutral allows for a far better conversation than not having all the information and being very, very opinionated in your beliefs without a lot of research about it. Now, that's not to say that it's not wrong to be principled, but you know, it's also, but it, yeah, exactly. So
everybody has principles. Anybody that cares about this claims to. So there has to be some sort of abiding mutual respect in order to, all right, we can't both get 100% of what we want here. So, I mean, there has to be some willingness to approach it that way, or President Obama was right when he recently said, then democracy, a federal republic, whatever you want to call it, begins to break down.
Exactly. And so I think reflecting on that, I'm incredibly happy that at our point in our life as our parents, my parents become more of my friends than sort of the parental unit, that we aren't like I would love to have Thanksgiving with them, and we disagree on a lot of things, but that disagreement only strengthens our relationship. And I think that's what was missing in the 60s, and I think it's what's missing today, is the ability to disagree and form a stronger relationship. And I think that's what shows on almost 200 plus hours of recorded conversation, plus another 200 hours of precast, postcast between you and I, that we can really disagree on something.
But hours, Bethesda.
Yeah, exactly.
God, many nights.
You know, and we're really disagreeing, but understanding that it's debate. It isn't life and death, because tomorrow you don't die because of the conversation. Or, you know, obviously, bad things do happen to people. But you know, at the end of the day, debate is philosophy, and it's there to really make us think. So anyway, I guess maybe that's saying, I think
the Bobby. Sierra and I talked about this recently, and he even said it. He said, no, it did become like a mini salon whenever we were there or at the house in Rockville. He said, three or four of us would sit around and listen to y'all banter about it. He said, I remember that shit going on for 2 hours.
Yeah, but it wasn't, to me, it was never, well, I'm Second Amendment, so F you, bro. And
point. He said that's why people watched. He said because it was an actual, both of you knew what you were talking about. You just approached the discussion completely different ways. He said it was meant to be a compliment.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, at the end of the day, we break bread, and that's what matters the most. So, yeah, I really do encourage both anyone who has a conservative mindset, anyone who is really progressive, I highly encourage it. And then for international listeners, if you're able to get that, definitely watch it. I think it's a really interesting insight into the politics in the times of the 60s, which I think were far more contentious than the politics of today. Because we could easily have, let's just pretend Donald Trump was elected and really kind of took the presidential or respected the office of the president different than he has. I don't know that we would have as a divided nation as we do, but I think it's really, I do really believe that the rhetoric that, again, I just come back to this, I think the rhetoric of the president itself emboldens trolls and sort of creates this divisive nature. Social media certainly is a new thing, and that plays a role of creating echo chambers.
I adhere more to him being a symptom than you do. I get it. You agree that he is to a certain degree.
I would say he's a symptom and maybe a catalyst. And maybe a catalyst and a symptom we don't need, because I think we could maybe have better conversation. But I think social media probably plays a greater role in sort of echo chambers
One thing's for sure, upset. It wouldn't be nearly as interesting without him.
That is for sure.
My old man was right. We picked a hell of a time to launch into this.
Yeah, but you know, I'm not a huge history buff as much as I would like to be. I certainly think I try to read things when I can, and thank goodness for places like Netflix, but some of it can be fairly biased to be able to look at history, because it's just really interesting when you dive into it, how much doesn't change or how much of what happens, it sort of seeps into culture, and the same things keep coming up. So, that documentary is Bobby Kennedy for President, and,
it's worth it. At least watch the first episode. At least do yourself that favor, and I'm betting at that point you'll be hooked and finish it.
Yeah, it's definitely political, but they do a good job.
It is, but I'm not a progressive. Newsflash to everybody.
But here's the thing, if you go and listen to what Bobby Kennedy, when he finally ran for president, what he really stood for, that's something that conservatives and progressives alike can all agree on, right? We could all sit around the table and say, yes, I don't think anyone in the United States should starve. I mean, that's insane. We're the richest country in the world. Maybe something today, the difference, there are starving children, but let's just transpose another issue. Today I went and picked up an inhaler. I don't really have bad asthma, but it's enough to, you know, kind of cough and stuff like that. And I happen to have good insurance, so I can go see an allergy immunologist, and I got this. We'll just put you on this inhaler for 90 days. Like, perfect, let's just do it. And I walked up to the counter today and to pick it up, and the lady looks at me and she says, "Do you know how expensive this is?" And I said, "Nope, but go ahead and let me hear it." So needless to say, it was $300. And I said, "Well, there's no way I can pay out of pocket for this for a cheaper price." She goes, because sometimes you get vouchers and stuff like that. And she goes, "Well, your insurance paid $1,000 of it." And I was like, holy crap. And I'm lucky enough to be able to get that. And so that's, you know, but someone else, that might be the difference between rent, food, et cetera. And so another case was a patient that I had, and this is what people probably understand more, because insulin seems to be that major go-to issue, that a patient paid $500 out of pocket, you know, and this is a Medicaid recipient. They just didn't quite have their healthcare figured out. And they said, "We just paid $500 out of pocket for this, you know, this arguably life-saving medication." And I was able to find them a voucher enough that it would cost them $237. And this is, I think, a Bobby Kennedy platform. I think if Bobby Kennedy was here in 2019, this would be the hill that he, no pun intended, would die on. Be the martyr for. I mean that in all respect. I really do.
No, I know.
And so there are huge issues today that,
you know, I look forward to meeting you on the other side of discussing those. I do, because I think he was sincere, as I think you are. I think at times he was sincerely mistaken. But, I mean, everyone's human, and it's why we have the multiple perspectives to
abuse that. You know, to get back to that, like the idea of conservatives and progressives sitting around and saying that, you know, we can all agree there shouldn't be starving children. I think that progressives and conservatives alone together can sit around and say that it's crazy that we would have to spend those prices on medications. But again, that's where a lot of the conversation stops. But you know, I think
it's unfortunate.
It is unfortunate that, and I don't mean that every conservative progressive. It's a bummer, dude. This is the reason it's so important to be informed, and this is the reason that it's so important to really understand the side that you're willing to go to bat for, to be able to have meaningful debate and meaningful discussion. I think we just don't know enough about things, and we really get up in arms and emotional about specific things we feel passionate about, but we're not entirely sure why we're passionate. Maybe we're just passionate because it just shouldn't be this way. But beyond that, it's like, okay, if that's your principled on that, like, explain to me why you feel like it shouldn't be that way. Or you can tell me why you, yeah, it's $500. It shouldn't be that way. But okay, so then tell me what we should do, because we can identify the problem, but how many times are we going to identify the problem over and over and over again? We have to do something. So I think that ultimately was what Bobby Kennedy was doing. There was a problem, and it was said over and over, and he really took action, something he was principled for. So
I think if nothing else, he effectively put the ball into play. And I think that's above all else. I mean, what we try and do here, while I would encourage anybody, if you're interested, to go back and to listen to the last 15 episodes we've done, because we've had a lot of a shift, of course, towards impeachment. But at the same time, we've kept that perspective of there's times we disagree that, hell, I mean, there's been times that I know I've been wrong in here, and I've come away, and I've honestly, through my life, just like being around a diverse crowd of folks, having a diversity of opinion, and that iron striking iron, the sparks that fly, even coming away on the losing side of that quote, I don't know, I've always felt like that strengthened me, and has enhanced, I don't know, our dialogue, and I think the American people, whether they know it or not, are crying out for it.
Yeah, I agree.
And Bob was successful in sparking that debate.
Indeed. Well, hey, my friend, that's getting us to 40 minutes, and I think that's a good time to wrap it all up. So until next time,
au revoir.
See you.